beautiful tract of land is called Parasuram Chaitra. Lord Parasuram, the son of Jamadagni, Renuka, seeing the corruption of the Kshatriya class, put aside his Brahminical status and picked up his and annihilated the Kshatriya race 22 times. Then he gave everything to the great rishis headed by Kashyapa and wanted to perform bhajan, but there was no place because he gave everything away. So he came to this place and threw his chopper into the ocean, and from where it landed the ocean withdrew and that much space became land. From the southern part of Maharashtra through Karnataka, Goa, all the way to the bottom of Kerala, this is all considered Parasuram Chaitra. It was here that a Brahman of the Shivali origin named Madhyadeha Bhat was residing, a very pious devotee of the Lord. He and his wife, Vedavati, had one daughter, but very much desired to have a son. It is explained that when great personalities have this longing in their heart, it is the Paramatma that inspires. You see, at the time, the Mayavad teachings of Sripad Shankaracharya were predominant over the whole of India. There was practically nowhere that anyone could find the proper understanding of the Vedic scriptures. We know that from the Puranas, Vishnu Purana, that Sripad Shankaracharya was personally ordered by Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva was ordered by Lord Vishnu to take birth as Shankaracharya, to create a Mayavad conception of the Vedas for the purpose of promoting the effects of the evils of Kali Yuga. He did such a thorough job. First he ousted the Buddhists, he reestablished the authority of Vedas, but the authority which he conceived was undermining the very purpose of the Vedas. Jivera Swarupur Krishna Ranitidas. We are all eternal servants of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, anyone who hears Mayavad philosophy, even once, submissively, their devotion is ruined. Even if a person is living in Vaikuntha, he will fall down if he hears this philosophy, because it destroys the whole sentiment of service and inflames that egoistic propensity to want to become one with God. And the followers of Shankaracharya over the generations had become very, very powerful, and they held exclusively the reins of the Vedic culture. To speak against them, or to speak of, to challenge them, was utter heresy. But many sincere people, they could see that this philosophy is still full of contradictions and misinterpretations. But what could they say? Ramanujacharya appeared in the eastern part of South India. And he did a very formidable job of teaching what he called qualified monism. It is explained in the Madhava Vijay, the authorized biography of Sripad Madhvacharya. The great sages, rishis, and even some of the devatas, they actually prayed to the Lord to save the earth from the influence of Mayavad philosophy. And he told them that he would send his dear servant, Vayu, to expand himself as an incarnation to do this work. Madhyageha in Vedavati tried by many means for many years, but there was no son. They understood for a proper child to be born, there has to be tapasya. It is not that great things come cheaply. There's no greater benediction to a householder than to have a God-conscious child who could liberate the world. This is what they wanted. They were living here at Pajakchetra. They would walk all the way to Udupi. And they would do prayer and tapasya for the pleasure of Ananteshwar. We have just come from Udupi. The word Udupi is a name for the king of the stars, which is the moon. There's two very ancient temples there. One is Chandramoleshwar. That is Lord Shiva, who was holding the moon upon his head. It is said that Udupi was named after him, Lord Shiva, who was holding the moon. And there is also the temple of Anandeshwar, who is Vishnu resting upon Anantashesha. It is appearing like a Shiva Lingam, but it's actually Lord Vishnu. So Madhyageha Bhat and his good wife would go there and they would worship that deity. In fact, they worshiped that deity for 12 years, praying for a son. And during that 12 years, they fasted, Payovrata, only taking some milk, some bananas. This place at the time was very beautiful. It was a vast forest between here and Udupi. And Madhyageha Bhat was a landowner who was growing crops. But still, each day he would travel those long miles and spend hours and hours and hours doing his puja. One day there was a big festival in Anandeshwar temple. And at that time, one of the priests of the temple, he got up on a raised platform where the flag is showing, and he called out with tremendous inspiration that Lord Anandeshwar is speaking, that very soon a child will be born who will be a dear associate of the Lord, who will establish real religion in this age of Kali. Within his heart, Madhyageha Bhat knew that that was the message, that his prayers and his tapasya would be fulfilled. Soon after, in this very place that we are sitting, where this beautiful little temple is, Sripad Madhvacharya was born. Beautiful child, exhibiting such transcendentally beautiful features. And the symbols that were present on his body indicated that he was truly a great soul. His father and mother named him Vasudev. When he was just a little child, so many stories are recorded of his incredible qualities. We understand from our acharyas that Vayu had three incarnations. First was Hanumanji, second was Bhima, and third, Sri Padmadvacharya. So little Vasudev, he exhibited such incredible qualities. We know Bhima, he performed pastime of eating a lot. Prabhupada explains one of his names is Brikodar, which means one who has incredible appetite and digestion, like a wolf. So one time, Vasudev's mother and father, they had to go somewhere, so they had his elder sister babysit for him, and he started crying. She didn't know how to stop his crying. So there was some horse gram, which is usually what is used to feed oxen, grains, and there was a big pile of it, bigger than what a herd of oxen could eat. And he ate the whole mountain of horse grass, although he was only an infant child. When the mother returned and the sister told him what happened, she was very much worried. But he did not show even the slightest detection of indigestion. Another time, early morning, his parents happened to just turn their heads, and when they turned around again, he was gone. They searched everywhere. The whole town and area was looking everywhere for Vasudev, but they could not find him. Around sunset time, they happened to see a huge bull coming into town, and hanging from his tail was little Vasudev. From before sunrise to after sunset, he was holding on to the tail of this bull, taking a nice excursion through the countryside. As he grew up little, in this temple, there is a stone. You will see it. It's a rock, and it is said that that was Madhvacharya's desk. His father began to teach him the alphabet, and that's where he learned. This is when he was hardly 5 years old. His father gave him the sacred thread and initiated him and started teaching him the Sanskrit language and alphabet, grammar, and started teaching him scriptures. And he was such an incredibly astute student that he could not even tolerate if his father or any other teacher would repeat a lesson more than once. He would listen, and he would appear to just be... He was very playful. He used to love to do sports. He could jump from mountain to mountain. Whatever he did, he was the champion. So sometimes his teachers were thinking, you know, how will you learn? You're always playing. He said, you ask me. What question do you have? They would ask a question. He would explain verbatim all the lectures that they had given, even weeks and months before. This is the brilliance of his memory. One day, when he turned about five, when he wasn't playing, he was very, very much attracted to spirituality. All his life, but it became more and more manifested. He would like to go to secluded places for hours and hours and hours and pray and meditate. There's a very beautiful hill close by with a very ancient and famous Durga temple. We would also go there sometimes and spend practically all day just doing prayer and worship. One day he was coming from that temple to return home. This is a couple kilometers from here. And a serpent attacked him. Not an ordinary serpent. In Mahabharata, there was a terrible demon named Maniman. This Maniman reincarnated in Madhva's Leela. And knowing him to be Bhima in previous life, he was avowed to kill him. This was a massive venomous snake. He was living in the forest. When he saw the small child, he roared. Horrible roar. Did you ever hear a snake roar? You can imagine what kind of snake it is that roars. Immediately leaped upon the small child Vasudev. The people of the village close by, they saw this. They were stunned with fright. But right before their eyes, they saw something that will be never forgotten in the pages of history. That little child Vasudev, with his toe, he crushed down the hood of this venomous snake, and then he pushed his toe and literally made his formidable hood into liquid. He just pressed it till it just was crushed and just was liquefied. When people came to see this great wonder, and they were all discussing it amongst themselves, little Vasudev was delayed. Meanwhile, his mother, she did not know what was happening. All she knew was, my son is late. Where is he? So in great anxiety, she cried out his name very loud. By his supersensitive powers, he could hear his mother calling. Although it's several kilometers from there, with one jump, he came back here. Now, perhaps, if Dayalchandra Prabhu allows, we will stop at that place where Madhvacharya delivered Maniman, the place where the serpent's hood was crushed, as well as his footprint. Because when he jumped to come back, he jumped with such force that his footprints entered into the rocks, and they are still there today. And in the other temple that we had just been in, his footprints are there, where the altar is, where he landed to meet with his mother. One day, a business person came to the house. He had loaned the father of Vasudev some money to buy two oxen. Now the father, Madhudehavata, he was struggling, as farmers sometimes struggle, and he was not able to pay the debt. So in those days, there was such a sense of honor and integrity that if a guest came to your house, whoever that guest was, until they were satisfied, you could not eat. Now what people used to do to pay off, to get their debts paid is they would come to your house and they would sit down, not in your house, not outside of your house, but right at your doorstep. And they would fast. What does that mean? That means you cannot eat. That means you cannot go in or out. That means you cannot even drink water until your guest is satisfied. And this was a very, very excellent technique of getting your debts paid. The debtor would do anything and everything to somehow. It was a matter of life and death. But later on, the British outlawed this system. So, Vasudeva's father, he was in terrible turmoil, that he had no money, there was no way to get any money, couldn't pay this debt, and this person vowed he would sit there and fast until the debt was paid. So Vasudeva came home after playing, and he saw this man sitting on the doorstep. He said, "Why are you here?" The man didn't answer. Then he went to his father and said, "Father, it's already beyond time for prasad. Why aren't you taking prasad? Come, take prasad." Father said, "I cannot take prasad." So Vasudeva understood. So he came to the man at the door and he said, "You please come with me." He was so beautiful and so charming, no one could refuse him. "So just over here is a tamarind tree, which has immortal history." He brought him to this tamarind tree, and Vasudeva filled his own hands with tamarind seeds and offered them as a gift. The man we are speaking of opened his hands, and Vasudeva filled his hands with these tamarind seeds. And he looked at his hands, and each tamarind seed turned into gold coins, exactly the amount of the debt, and more. So this man came to Madhvacharya's father and told him that your debt is paid, thank you very much. And he left. And then they all took nice prasad together. There are four tirthas, or holy queens, in this area, but they are all some distance away, that were established by Lord Parasarama when he lived here. And it is explained how on special holy occasions his father would go to all four of these places. But Vasudeva, seeing that it was too much trouble for his father one day when he was in ill health, he called all those holy places into this kund on which the banks are we are sitting. And he told father that you can bathe here. You never have to go to any other holy place. They're all here. It was hard to disbelieve him, but it's also a little hard to believe such a thing. So knowing his father's heart, he took a very small growing tree and he uprooted it. He brought it here and planted it upside down so that the roots were facing toward the sky. Now, what will a tree like that do? If any of us were to do that, the tree would die. So Vasudeva went over to this kund, and he took the water of the kund and he poured it on the tree, and right before his father and everyone else's eyes, as soon as the water touched the tree, it began to grow into a beautiful full-blown tree. And under the shade of this tree, we are now getting shelter. There was many beautiful stories of his youth. What a great scholar, what an illustrious personality he was in every sense. When he came to only the age of about 11, he decided that to fulfill his real mission in life, it would be necessary for him to renounce the world and become a sannyasi. Although he was the most brilliant student, and his father had the most promising plans to get him married and have grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, and thus continue his family's dynasty,
So,
he left home once, and he was searching for a proper sannyas guru. At that time, in a place not far from Udupi, there was a monastery where one very, very great personality, who was very famous as being a scholar and a man of excellent behavior, his name was Achyutaparikshit. Vasudeva went to him and appealed to him that he would accept him as a student and give him sannyas. Achyutaparikshit welcomed him into the ashram as a student, but told him as far as sannyas or any type of initiation as such, he would have to test him and watch him for at least 1 year. So Vasudeva accepted the position of very, very menial service under his aspiring Guru Maharaj. He served in any and every possible way according to his Guru's desire. Meanwhile, Madhigrihapati and Vihabati were wondering, where is our son? We've not seen him for so many days. They were searching everywhere. And finally, the father found him in Achyutaparikshit's ashram. While there, he heard that his son was determined to become a sannyasi. Now, you know how difficult it is for parents to even accommodate the idea of their son being a brahmachari. Even after they get their master's degree in college in Bombay, what to speak of an 11-year-old child determined to take a sannyas? We have seen parents, broken-hearted, minds disarrayed, if the child, after graduating college in the early 20s, they say, I just want to live in the ashram for a year or so. So impossible. And what is the love of our parents for us compared to the love of Madhigrihapati to Vasudeva? He was really an object of love. This was impossible. No, you come home now. You must come home. He said, no, no, I will become sannyas. You're a small child. You must come home. You cannot talk to sannyas. It was a very long discussion. The father at times was ordering him, I'm your father, you must obey. At other times, he was pleading with him on his hands and knees, flowing tears from his eyes, begging him, please, please, come home. We will die without him. At other times, he was chastising him like thunderbolt. No matter what he said, Vasudeva had the perfect answer. At one time, he fell at the feet of us, held his feet, and said, please, 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 come home. Vasudeva said, just see evidence. The only time a senior person touches the feet of a junior person is if that junior person is a sannyasi. His father became so angry at one point, he was shouting, demanding him come home. And Vasudeva, just to prove his point, he picked up a cloth, he tore it into a coconut and put it on. I will take sannyas. Who will protect us? You're all that we have. Our only son. Vasudeva said, his heart got soft at that point. He said, all right, but you make me a promise that if another son is born
that you will give your blessings that I take sannyas.
He said, I cannot make such a promise. He said, then tell me this. If another son is born, and my mother, she makes that promise, then you will let me take sannyas. He said, all right. So he went home, and in a very short time, it was found that Vedavati was pregnant with a child. When Vasudeva heard mother was pregnant, he came home and told mother that when you have a son, you must give me blessings to take sannyas. Because father already said, if you give your blessings, his blessings are automatic. She said, impossible, I cannot give such a blessing. He said, then I will make this arrangement. You have two choices. Don't give me your blessing. I will not take sannyas, but I promise you, you will never see my face as long as you live. Give me your blessings, I'll take sannyas, but I'll visit you sometimes. She gave her blessings. He went back to Achyuta Prasya's ashram, and the day the child was born, the year had already expired, where he was in his testing period, observing his guru nicely, and then the date was set where he would accept the renounced order of life. He was only 12 years old. It took place in Ananteshwar, Nadia. The whole town of Udupi was told that the crest jewel of everyone's heart, this most beautiful, charming, loving boy, who was the very personification of transcendental knowledge, was going to renounce the world forever. It was in the Ananteshwar Mandir that Vasudev, with a brilliant, solemn face, accepted the danda and took the vows of lifelong renunciation. Put on his kopan, shaved his head, and went to beg alms from the common people for dakshin for his Gurudev. And everyone in Udupi, their hearts were melted. The tears flowed from their eyes as they saw this beautiful young ascetic. He studied under his Guru Maharaj, who was actually a great soul. But because the doctrine of Shankaracharya was practically all that there was, Ramanujacharya's influence hardly touched this part of India. So he was a student and follower of Shankar. And he was basically a believer in the Advaitavad philosophy, although in his heart of hearts he saw that there was discrepancies, inconsistencies, and he really, really didn't believe in it. It was more just by cultural conditioning that he accepted it. So he would teach Vasudev lessons. At the time of taking sannyas, he gave him the name Purnapragyatirtha. That became his new name. One of the most classic fundamental literatures that all the scholars of the time were studying was called the Ishta Siddhi. And it was Shankaracharya's teachings. When he would teach that to Purnapragya would just tear it apart with such respect. Expert.
when his teacher would teach anything that had to do with Advaitavad, he would very respectfully and humbly defeat his guru. Now, usually, when someone defeats their guru, the guru is not very happy. But because he did it with such love and such respect, he could defeat his guru's philosophy without slightly violating the etiquette between guru and disciple. And in his heart of heart, Achyuta Pariksit was filled with joy to hear what his disciple was saying. But in his mind, he just couldn't accept it. He was too conditioned. So finally, he just decided, I'm not going to teach this scripture anymore to you because basically it's useless. And he was so proud of Purna Pragya. One day, a Digvijaya Pandit, very, very powerful scholar, he came to Udupi. And he sat before Achyuta Pariksit and his new disciple. This is very soon after the initiation. And in front of the whole town, he was completely defeated by a 12-year-old child. At that time, his Guru Maharaj considered him to be such a jewel of a disciple that he planned to coronate him as the next Acharya of his mat. In fact, he wanted to give him until Achyuta Pariksit retired or left his body. That at that time, he would become the Acharya. But he wanted to give him, on a limited basis, a section of the mat that he was the Acharya even then, when he was 12 years old. So there was like a coronation ceremony. And at that time, when he named him to be the next Acharya, he gave him the name Anandatirtha, because he took such incredible bliss at presenting the conclusions of the scriptures. It was at that time that he decided, Madhvacharya, which was another of his great names, he decided to take a pilgrimage to South India. He went down the western coast, traveling to all the various holy places. On the way, there's a place called Vishnu Mangala. There, he and some of his disciples, his main disciple at that time was someone, not actually a disciple, a person named Satyatirtha. Satyatirtha was the foremost disciple of Achyuta Pariksit. But he surrendered his life to his godbrother, Madhvacharya, and became his prominent follower. So on the way, they stopped at Vishnu Mangala, which is still a very holy place with a sacred temple. And there, one devotee fed them a big, big feast of prasad. And after taking this sumptuous feast to their full satisfaction, as a dessert, Madhvacharya ate 200 bananas. He continued his journey, stopping at so many places, preaching the doctrine of Advaita philosophy, refuting the Mayavada misconceptions. They came to Trivandrum. There is the very holy Ananta Padmanabh Mandir. They were based there. At that time, the leading sannyasi, who was the Acharya of Sringeri Math, happened to be there with his followers. Name was Vidyashankar Maharaj. Tremendous scholar. Had tremendous political power. So At the time, Madhvacharya was hardly 12, 13 years old. Vijayashankar heard what kind of influence and impact he was having on the common people. And he was utterly challenging everything Shankaracharya said. So Vijayashankar was very, very much concerned about this heretic. So they met. It was not a cordial meeting. Vijayashankar saw this little boy as a threat to their whole sampradaya. And at the same time, Anandatirtha, Purnaprajna, Vasudev, Madhvacharya, so many wonderful names he had. This child, he considered that Vijayashankar represented the ruination of bhakti on the planet. They were enemies. Vijayashankar, he was a very old, senior, mature scholar. And Anandatirtha was just a beautiful, smiling boy with a dhan in his hand. A debate took place. This was a historical debate. Sometimes Vijayashankar was so angry he would start shouting and screaming. And Madhvacharya, in reply, would shout and scream. In the end, Vijayashankar was utterly defeated. But he would not admit it. He could not accept it. And the people around were just shocked to see. So they parted ways. Madhvacharya went to various holy places and ultimately came to Rameshwaram. When he arrived at Rameshwaram, the Chaturmasi began. Now in those days, it was a very strong tradition that sannyasis would never travel during Chaturmasi. They would stay in one place. So he decided to make his base at Rameshwaram. But to everyone's great surprise, without knowing the other person's whereabouts, Vijayashankar, the leader of Sringeri Math, of Shankaracharya, he happened to arrive in Rameshwaram at the beginning of Chaturmasi. So they both had to be right next to each other for 4 months. Because of Madhvacharya's incredible versatility in the way he strongly supported his philosophy of dualism, his name became very, very prominent. After Vijayashankar was defeated, the only thing he had to hold on to admit that he had lost, is he said, "You are blaspheming the Shankar Bhasya of Vedanta Sutra, which is the essence of all knowledge. Unless you have your own commentary, then you have no grounds to speak anything." Hare Krishna. At that time, in his heart of hearts, he decided, "I must compile Purnaprajna Bhasya, the personalistic conclusions of the Vedanta Sutra." On his way back to Udupi, he stopped at Srirangam and other great holy places. While he was at Udupi, he asked his teacher for permission to go to Badrikashram to meet with Vedavyas. because in his heart of hearts he considered Vedavyasa his guru, since he was the compiler of all the Vedic literatures. His teacher said, no, it was hard enough for me to let you go to South India. In Badrikashram, I cannot go with you, I'm too old. And do you know what it was like to go to Badrinath in those days? It's hard enough now. Brahmacharis want to go to Badrinath for years for yatra, but due to the difficulties, still they're not able to go. But we have been several times to Badrinath. First you have to take that long train to Delhi. Then you have to take bus to Haridwar, Rishikesh. Then you have to take another bus. And those buses, I personally see, if you just go up to Rudraprayag, by that point, the buses stop. You'll see every single bus, every other window, has these streaks of vomit. Have you seen? I carefully observe this. Every bus at the stops, I was seeing, either every window or every other window, were these big streaks of human vomit. Because the road is so rough, people just stick their head out the window and respond to the calling of their nauseous stomach. And the first time I went there, I remember I was looking down and I didn't even see a road under, because the road is so thin that the bus's wheels are right against the edge of the road, and you don't even see the road. You just see a cliff. So far, you cannot even see the bottom. But every now and then, I'd see little buses laying in the bottom. I even saw one of them that was still on fire. It's a very common thing that buses just make the wrong, the little inattentiveness, and you fall down. And the Indian government, if you go to Badrinath by bus, you'll see they take your name before you get on the bus. Because once your bus falls to the bottom, they never go down to see who's there. There's no way to get there. They just lay there forever. And the only way they know if you're on it is if your name is on the list. Hare Krishna. Even some people that we knew very well, their buses fell from on the road to Badrinath, never to be seen again. Very common. But in those days, there wasn't even a road. You had to walk from Udupi all the way. And beyond Rishikesh, it was all just dense jungle with tigers, lions, leopards, snakes, panthers, dacoits. And when you get up there, it's so high and so much snow that even one or two generations back, when a person was at the last stage of life, it was a tradition in certain communities in northern India that when they would retire from everything in life, they would begin their journey to walk to Badrinath. And probably 99% of the time, the person never came back, because they would either die on the way or on the way back. So here was a boy in his teens, he was asking his guru for permission to walk to Badrinath. No, impossible. But he was so insistent, he was so persistent, that I want to meet my blessed, worshipable deity, Srila Veda Vyas there. And seeing the unparalleled, supernatural qualities of his disciple, he gave his blessings. So with Satyatirtha and a couple other of his followers, he began his journey to Badrikashram. So he began this journey, and he stopped at so many holy places on the way, but he was very determined. So they came to Badrikashram, where the deity of Badri Vishal, where Naranarayan Rishi is worshipped even to the present day. There, what ecstasy Madhvacharya and his followers experienced as they worshipped that deity in that beautiful holy place, so pristine and transcendent from any of the modes of this materialistic world. Madhvacharya, early morning, would go to take his bath in the freezing ice-cold Alaknanda River, and he would perform his Gayatri and his prayers in the river, offer oblations. That may seem ordinary, but when we go there, you try to do that. And then he would go to a secluded place, a rock on a mountain, and he would just sit there throughout the entire day, just absorbed in his prayer, his meditation, and his chanting of the names of God. Other times he would sit for hours and hours and hours, just chanting and praying and worshipping the deity of Badri Vishal. He had composed a commentary of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. One night, when everyone was sleeping, he went into the deity room and he started reading his commentary of Bhagavad Gita to the deity of Badrinath. As he was reading, he was praying for the deity's blessings, because he felt without those blessings he could not propagate these teachings or publish the work. At that time, the devotees who were sleeping outside the deity room, they could hear the Lord speaking to Madhvacharya. He told him how he fully approved of his commentary of Bhagavad Gita, and he fully approved of his mission to stamp out Mayavad misconception, and told him that this commentary of Bhagavad Gita was perfect, because not only was it precise in its explanation of Vedavyasa's true meaning of the verses, but it was also very short and very succinct in its presentation, so even the common people could understand it. So he had officially received the blessing. Then Madhvacharya wanted to meet Vedavyasa, but he knew that Vedavyasa is living in Uttar Badri, the Badrikashram, which is way in the peaks of the Himalayas, that no mortal man has ever gone. So he sat in a rock on the banks of the Alaknanda River for days and weeks, performing tapasya and fasting to get the blessings of Veda Vyas to go. And one day Veda Vyas appeared to him in a vision and gave him blessings. You can come. He told his followers, you cannot come, it's too difficult, I will go alone. But Satyatirtha, he was like Madhvacharya's shadow. There was no place he didn't go along with his beloved guru. So he prayed, please, please, let me come. So Madhvacharya said, all right, you may come. He began to walk. Now, it's hard enough getting to the Badrinath that's accessible. Practically no one could make it there in those days and live. But he was going to the other Badrikashram, which no man had ever dared to even attempt to go to. There's no path. Some place only jungle, and beyond that no trees, just mountains of snow. Satyatirtha saw how he was just jumping from mountain to mountain. And he was trying to follow him. And at a certain point it became so utterly impossible. He was utterly exhausted. His body was racked with pain. There was no way he could go on any further. But at the same time, it was impossible for even to go back. So Madhvacharya looked at him and smiled and waved with his hand, you go back. But when he waved with his hand, a wind came out of his hand and picked up Satyatirtha and carried him all the way back to the Ananda Math at Badrinath, where all of his god-brothers were waiting for him. There he explained how Guru Maharaj is doing this. Higher and higher and higher until he came to Badrikashram of Vyasadeva. There he saw it was not an abode of snow. It was Vaikuntha on earth. The most beautiful place. With streams and lakes and auspicious birds, everything was there. And there he saw in the hermitage were the great Mahatmas, who were the associates of Veda Vyas. To live there meant you had to be completely transcendental to the world below. Only those who had no material desires, only those with utterly pure hearts could be. He fell at the lotus feet of Srila Veda Vyas. Veda Vyas picked him up and embraced him. As he looked at the beautiful form of Veda Vyas, he felt that this was the perfection of all of his devotion. His hairs were standing on end, his limbs were trembling and tears were flowing in his eyes in love. Then all of the great Mahants who were living there, they all welcomed him with such transcendental hospitality. He felt right at home. There under a tree, he sat and heard his Guru Maharaj Veda Vyas speak. For weeks and weeks and weeks, Srila Vyasadeva instructed Madhvacharya, who became his favorite most disciple. Madhvacharya presented to him his Bhagavad Gita commentary. Veda Vyas certified that this is the true conclusions. He asked his permission and blessings to write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And Veda Vyas gave his blessings. A commentary that would once and for all eradicate the misconceptions of Advaita philosophy. Srila Vyasadeva then told him that you have a mission I know you want to stay up here forever with me, and similarly I want you, but you have a mission. You must go down to the earth now. In the environment of the conditioned souls under illusion. And you must teach these pure principles of religion. Madhvacharya left Badrikashram and quickly returned to the Badrinath, where the temple is situated. There he met with his devotees. On his way down the mountain, he composed his commentary of Vedanta Sutra, known as the Purna Pragya Bhashya. While walking down the mountain, he compiled. And his servant, God brother who acted as disciple, Satyatirtha, he wrote everything down perfectly in several copies. Thus, Madhvacharya had the authority of a shastra to back his words. So, we are very fortunate to be here at this holy place of the appearance of Srimad Madhvacharya. One of our great previous acharyas of our Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally accepted initiation from Ishwara Puri, who was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who was the disciple of Lakshmipati Tirtha, all in the line of Sripad Madhvacharya. The four Vaishnava Sampradayas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu selected that this is the best. Brahma instructed Narada. Narada instructed Vyasadeva. We have heard just the story of Vyasadeva instructing Madhvacharya. And from him the line came down to Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally came, accepting Sripad Madhvacharya as one of his great spiritual forefathers in Parampara. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Shripad Madhvacharya ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai. One of the most special aspects of bhakti, which is the very essence of the Supreme Reality, is how Krishna reciprocates with the efforts of his devotees. Today is a miraculous testimony of this reciprocation. If we could appreciate even a drop from the oceanic significance of what I'm about to describe to you, that is personally and practically happening in our lives, our hearts would erupt with a volcanic reaction of ecstatic love for Krishna. With your permission, I will proceed. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath have descended from Goloka Vrindavan by Srila Prabhupada's desire to give us all the opportunity to make some effort to serve them. In this service, like very feeble, uncoordinated, retarded creatures, we are trying to somehow or other execute the activities of the spiritual world. As Shishi Radha Gopinatha performing their divine leela of mercy on the altar in their temple, we are all making some efforts to try to satisfy them, knowing that satisfying them is like watering the root of the tree of our lives. So as you have seen, the deities have been moved into a foreign place for the past couple of months, and some inconveniences there for all of us. The reason is some efforts to try to make their temple a more enjoyable place for their pastimes and a more beautiful place for the devotees to come and experience the spiritual world in their presence. On January 30th, we have planned that the deities will move back into their brand new altar. In a very beautifully renovated deity room, pujari room, and temple room. Now, what is this miracle I'm talking about? We came here on this yatra to honor the great representatives of Shripad Madhvacharya and to worship Udupi Krishna, the Lord's very ancient form. But the most important significance of this yatra, no one was aware of. When you take installed deities away from their main altar, there has to be a grand celebration with Abhishekam and other wonderful offerings. It's not that you just move them around, they're installed deities. So we really don't know what to do or how to do it, according to the highest standards of archana, puja. But last night we went for the Ratha Yatra, and after all of you left, I was about to leave. Actually, somehow or other, great things don't come without first some austerity. So while you were leaving, I was performing some austerity in the service of Srila Prabhupada's mission for some time. And after that tapasya, late at night, I happened to go into the prasadam area after everyone had left. And there was an illustrious personality taking prasad. So I humbly appealed to him to join our yatra, and he immediately accepted. This divine personality is Jananivas Prabhu. He is the senior most exalted pujari in the whole society of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada personally instructed him to perform the puja in Sri Mayapur Dham and personally instructed on how to perform the puja in Sri Mayapur Dham. In the international headquarters for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Prabhupada blessed him to be the head pujari, which means, in essence, he is the head pujari for the whole ISKCON. And when I was head pujari at New Vrindavan, Prabhupada sent two Shalagram Shilas for me to inaugurate the worship of Shalagram Shila in the Western world. In one of his purports, Prabhupada says that this Shalagram Shila will soon be instituted in the Western world. So he sent two Shalagram Shilas to New Vrindavan for that purpose. And he wrote with his own hands some instructions how to worship Shalagram. He said, you bathe with water, and you offer tulsi leaves and chandan. First class Shalagram worship means tulsi leaves. And then you paint a face on him, offer him dhoti, and give him crown and flute. If you want to understand more about Shalagram worship, you should consult Jananivas Prabhu in Mayapur. So after that time, I was not allowed to leave the deities. He was not allowed to leave the deities. We were 10,000 miles apart. We never met each other, never saw each other. But I was asking him questions, he was replying, and without ever seeing or meeting each other directly, because we were both worshipping Krishna in opposite ends of the world, we became best of friends. Yeah. And dearest God brothers. So some years ago, there were so many questions about different standards of deity worships that are followed in different temples. And devotees came to me, and I said, Prabhupada told me to follow Jananivas, so we should all follow Jananivas. So yesterday, when we happened to see him, to our great shocking surprise, he practically never, ever, ever leaves Sridhar Mayapur. Very rare. He spent decades without ever leaving. And now, only on very rare occasions does he leave. To our amazement, he happened to come to Mangalore for the purpose of installing the deities of Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. So for this wonderful installation ceremony, reinstallation ceremony of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, presiding over this function will be the topmost of all pujaris in this creation, Jananivas Prabhu. Blessing me. This is Krishna's inconceivable love and mercy to show his satisfaction and pleasure for your service. So please be there. And Jananivas Prabhu in the car coming back last night, he got back very late. He said to me, I've heard about this Radha Gopinath Pushyabhishek. It's the full moon night in January, which is in a few days. He said, I would like to, when are you celebrating it? I've always wanted to see it. I told him the plan is Sunday the 30th, with the moving of Radha Gopinath to temple, deities to the new temple, we're going to be celebrating Pushyabhishek also. So Gopinath is calling his dear servitor to give him great satisfaction in his heart. And he's showing his pleasure and his love for all of your service through this very astounding, extraordinary pastime. Let us all wholeheartedly welcome Jananivas to our yatra. He began by speaking some of the significant topics of the life of Sripad Madhvacharya when we visited his birthplace in Pratakakshetra. Today we are sitting in another very, very holy place of his pastimes, the beach of Malpai, where his worshipful Lord, Krishna, revealed himself to his devotee. Does anyone remember where we left off in our last narration?
Sridhar from Badrika.
Coming down, dictating the commentary.
Sripad Madhvacharya went to Badrikashram. There he recited his commentary of Bhagavad Gita to the deity of Nara Narayan, and the deities personally spoke and gave approval and blessings that he publish it and distribute it. This was overheard by some of his devotees. Then he performed tapasya on the banks of the Alaknanda River, in the peaks of the Himalayas. He didn't eat or drink anything. He sat on a rock for 48 days, praying to Srila Vyasadeva for his permission and blessings to come to his ashram to surrender at his lotus feet. After 48 days, Srila Vedavyasa appeared to him and gave him blessings. During that time, he also observed silence, where he did not speak to anyone. He was simply immersed in chanting and prayer. He made his last will and testament, because as we explained last class, it's practically never that anyone can return from even the lower Badrinath, or to speak of the higher Badrinath. No man has ever gone there. Shankaracharya, he established his mission up to the lower Badrikashram and down to the southern parts of India. But Madhvacharya wanted to top him in every way. He told his devotees he cannot come, it is too dangerous. So his last will and testament, he was a sannyasi, he had no possessions, he had no temples, he had nothing. But when a father is leaving the world, he makes a will for his children. So he dictated his will to his devotees, that Lord Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is all-merciful. And everyone, all living beings in all of the world, I bless them that they receive his mercy and they worship him with all their hearts. Now I am going to Badri, and I may or may not return. This is the blessing I give you all. So he gave his will to all of humanity, and he gave the greatest wealth, devotion to Krishna. Then he began his journey. When he was but part of the way, he was followed by Satyatirtha, who was his beloved follower, Shiksha disciple. He was called the shadow of Sripad Madhvacharya, because there was nowhere that the guru went that this disciple did not go with him. He was willing to risk his life, accept any inconvenience, or face death, but he never wanted to give up the service of his Gurudev. He was astounded. Going way, way up, there was nothing but snow and mountain peaks, no paths. Shripad Madhvacharya, who was Hanuman in previous avatar, he was just jumping from mountain to mountain. And Satyatirtha was trying to follow him. After some days, he was exhausted. His body was totally worn out. There was no food. There was nothing. Nothing to drink. Just snow. Days and days and days trying to keep up with Madhvacharya, who was completely full of life, energy, and ecstasy with the anticipation, I'm going to have the darshan of my spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva. When he saw Satyatirtha in that condition, he told him he should go back to the Ananda Math in Lower Badri, where the deity is residing. And he waved his hand, saying, you go back. When he waved his hand, a mystical wind came and picked up Satyatirtha and carried him right back to the Ananda Math in Badrikashram, where he explained to all the devotees the incredible devotional powers of their Guru Maharaj. There in Badrikashram, Shripad Madhvacharya surrendered his life at the lotus feet of Srila Vedavyasa. He sat there for many days in rapt attention, hearing Srila Vedavyasa speaking from the holy scriptures. It was at that time that Srila Vedavyasa initiated Shripad Madhvacharya into the higher understandings of the Shastra. It was at that time that Srila Vedavyasa gave Shripad Madhvacharya the order, the blessings, and the empowerment to reveal his inner desire through his commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. And then he sent Madhvacharya back into the world of conditioned souls. On his way down the mountain, he composed his commentary of the Vedanta Sutra, known by the followers of Madhvacharya as the Sutra Bhasya or the Purna Pragya Bhasya. By the time they reached the bottom of the mountain, Satyatirtha had already written down several copies of his commentary for the benefit of the world. And the first thing Madhvacharya did is he had one of his disciples send by hand courier one of the copies to his initiating spiritual master, Achyuta Pariksha, who was a great soul, but who was still attached to the Advaitavada philosophy. He read that, and he understood this is superior to Shankaracharya or any, but due to traditional conditions, he still held on to the Advaita conception. Meanwhile, Shripad Madhvacharya traveled down with his few disciples. One of the places, it is explained they went, was the high seat of learning in all of eastern India, Nadia, Sri Navadvip Dham, the place of the devotional service of Jananivas Prabhu, where 200 years later the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would appear. Scholars from the whole India would come to Navadvip to study. And in the center of the mat was Shripad Madhvacharya, teaching his doctrine of pure devotional service. From Sri Navadvip Dham, he traveled down into Orissa to Jagannath Puri, where he visited the ancient temple of Baladev, Subhadra and Jagannath. From there he traveled to Kurukshetra, where he saw this ancient and beautiful deity of Lord Kurmadev. From there he traveled down to Singhachalam, where he had the darshan of Varaha Narasimha. Then he came to the banks of the holy river Godavari. He began to instruct the masses on the banks of Godavari. But especially that particular area of India, many, many great, great scholars. And he was such a formidable opposition to the prevalent doctrine of Shankaracharya that he was considered to be the world's greatest threat to the established religion of the day. All different types of pundits and scholars came to challenge him, knowing that if they could defeat him once, even once, then it would discredit his mission forever. Madhvacharya would sit on the banks of the river Godavari, so gentle, so gracious, so respectful to all. And whatever arguments came to him, he was never flustered, he would never become angry. He would just speak and utterly obliterate any misconceptions. And he did it in such a graceful and effortless way that it was driving his opponents mad. At that time, one of the most illustrious epics in history took place. The greatest pundit of that whole region of India, who was a staunch advocate of Advaita philosophy, decided that Madhvacharya must be destroyed with his arguments. His name was Shobhanabhat. Shobhanabhat was born a genius. He had an infallible memory by all human standards. He was such a logician. He had such mastery over the Shastra. He had such forceful presentation that no one could stand before him. And he was quite proud of his self-worth. He came to the banks of Godavari and challenged Sri Padmadvacharya to a debate. This word spread quickly in all directions. The greatest scholars, pundits, and religious leaders all assembled for this debate. This was the match of all matches. The greatest scholar of Advaita against the greatest opponent of Advaita. Today, when India plays Pakistan in cricket, you know how much attention it brings? But in regard to debate at the time, this was the match of all matches. It was the once and for all deciding battle of which is superior, Dvaita or Advaita. Hordes of people came. The most qualified people. Pin drop silence. The umpires were chosen and agreed by both sides. Who is going to be the making the decision of who is victorious? So Shobhanabhat began his aggressive attack against the doctrine of Sri Padmadvacharya. It was a stunning presentation. He went on hour after hour after hour. Shri Padmadvacharya, he was such a powerful preacher that he could remember every argument the person spoke and repeat it, even hours or days later, and expose all of the fallacies within it. It was an incredible match. They were both undefeatable. They were both genius. They both knew their subject and knew the sastras inside and out. As the debate continued, Shobhana Bhatt was losing his patience. He could see that all of his convictions were not only attacked, but defeated. Within the midst of this debate, people could see in his eyes and in his demeanor that he was losing faith in what he was preaching. In the end, the umpires unanimously declared, Advaita has lost and Madhvacharya is victorious. Shobhana Bhatt, he was a man of incredible integrity. With tears in his eyes, he approached the lotus feet of Shri Padmadvacharya and surrendered in front of everybody and begged him to be his initiated disciple. What did this mean? At that time, the Shankar school was the religion of South India. And Madhvacharya's teachings was considered by the masses, as well as by the scholars, to be just an upstart, bogus cult. You have heard this word before. By him surrendering to the teachings of Shri Padmadvacharya meant that he's going against the current of the whole society who has respected and worshipped him and offered him the highest position. That means he will become a laughingstock